Hello, I'm Renee Vaughan Sutherland, and welcome to Greater Than 11%, a weekly podcast that explores roles and opportunities within the creative industries, with the aim of contributing to increasing diversity across the board, in addition to promoting some awesome women. Episode 46, I'm joined by PR expert and founder, Lucy Werner. Lucy worked for a number of agencies such as Leo Burnett, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Eulogy and W Communications before deciding to found her own PR consultancy company in 2014 called The Wern. The Wern are a specialist communications consultancy and training hub for startups, entrepreneurs and independent brands. Lucy also consults for innovation, marketing and other public relation agencies on their go-to market strategies, raising CEO profiles and developing thought leadership. Her clients include Moju, Sutton & Sons, Jimmy's Iced Coffee, The Marshmallowist, and Vinyl Me Please. Using herself as an example, Lucy shows small businesses how to do their own PR without needing the impossibly large budgets of their more established competitors. She has freebies on her site, such as Master Your Media Toolkit, and is a regular speaker on all things public relations for the likes of General Assembly, Mother's Meetings, and Work Life. She's produced a 10-day e-learning course available on Highbrow, that covers how to get press for your business, and is currently writing a book titled Hype Yourself that will be available in early 2020. Her regular blogs fall into a number of categories from PR tips to opinion pieces and are informative and full of personality. She recently won a Growth Business Enabler Award from startup.co.uk and the Regional Micro Business of the Year Award from FCB. Lucy, how fabulous to have you here to learn more about your role and career, and I'm pleased we've nabbed you just before you headed off on maternity leave.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome to Greater Than 11%.
Thank you.
So I'm wondering if we can start with you talking about your role as a PR expert and also a founder, mm-hmm. and kind of what that entails.
Well, they're both quite different, obviously. I guess as a PR expert, it's more about taking my sort of knowledge out there and trying to help as many people as possible. That's what really drives me, is to just show people it's not all about the sponsored social media posts of I can get you in Forbes or The Times, to actually show people all the possibilities that your business can have or your personal profile can get from doing public relations. So the role is so varied, from sales to writing to being creative, strategic, financial planning. And I guess a bit of that then sort of falls into the founder side as well, of just being super, super organised. And there's that kind of, as much as there's that fluffy PR side of me, I think there's also a very, the geeky data side of me that's tracking everything and forecasting and projections and spreadsheets and keeping, making sure the business is financially viable as well.
Which is lovely segue into, can you give us a bit of background of your career leading up into founding The Wern,
yeah.
and then going forward?
So it's funny, actually, I was thinking about this a lot before I came today, and obviously I didn't want to go too far back from my primary school days, but somebody actually posted something yesterday about what did you want to be when you grew up, and I really wanted to be Terry Hatcher as Lois Lane in Superman, the TV show.
Nice.
And I just wanted to be a journalist so bad.
Yeah.
And I had no idea what PR was until my brother got me a week's work experience at a PR agency when I was 17. And I was like, wow. It was in Soho, and I was living in Kent at the time, and you could wear trainers and people were smoking on the roof, listening to music. And I just was, I couldn't believe that jobs like this existed. Mm-hmm. And I suddenly thought, hold on, I think this is my calling.
Yeah.
And I wanted to almost drop out of school and start it immediately, but I didn't. I kind of went through, I did the university path, came out, and then I didn't know anybody in PR, and I really struggled to get into PR. And every time I went to recruiters, they'd be like, no, you don't want to do PR, like, you want to do new biz, or you want to do marketing, or you want to do sales. So my first job was a marketing intelligence assistant for a data company in St. Albans. That was the closest I could get.
Yeah.
And then from there, I took on a team assistant role at Leo Burnett, but that was in the PR, marketing and new business department. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yes, okay, this is where I want to be. And that was a huge eye-opener to suddenly be in an office of like 500 people.
Yeah.
Such a creative space. We were sat in between the new business and the creative department. And then it was sort of a bit weird. I had a connection with Mr. and Mrs. Smith, so I moved in-house. And actually what I realised about in-house is that it's quite repetitive. And after a year and a half, I was like, well, I've already done a book and I've already sent loads of journalists on holidays and now I'm not being challenged enough. And it was a small team and there wasn't really anywhere to go other than my boss's role. And that's when I segued into a agency, which was Eulogy, which was actually my longest ever sort of gig in one agency. I was there for nearly 4 years. And there I was doing consumer and B2B. So I was like the kind of hybrid. Most people specialise, but I always like to do both. And actually it was a, it was something that served me well in the future because it meant that I could take a really dull like data company and get them at the front end of a consumer magazine, because I would always be thinking about things in a different way, not in the sort of the traditional way. And then I just sort of hopped about from agency to agency, really, as you kind of do, trying to clamber your way up, until I met Dominic Calls-Lateague, who set up Street Feast, and he was a client of W's for a project he was working on. And I think he just sort of hauled me out of the matrix, really. I remember vividly moving house and sitting in a van thinking, oh, I just don't know if I like agency life anymore, but I love PR, but I'm not enjoying what I'm doing. And he literally texts me within 3 minutes of me having that thought, going, would you consider working for me?
Wow. And had you had that conversation beforehand?
No.
That's amazing.
It was really weird. It was definitely like a sign from the universe. Yeah. So I left to work for him with my kind of boss's permission. And then all of a sudden I just had all these other businesses in East London were like, oh, actually, if you're a sort of lone ranger now, I've got a project and I've got a project. And the next thing I knew, there was a point where I was almost doing about 7 different businesses from Box Park in Shoreditch all the way down to like Sutton's and Sons, the fish and chip shop in Stoke Newington. And like everyone I was working for was on the Kingsland Road. It was sort of, amazing. I sort of had this strip for a while whilst I was sort of building it up.
Yeah. Wow. Can you discuss maybe why you decided to focus on small businesses and startups and entrepreneurs?
Yeah, I think having worked in a big agency land where obviously a lot of it's driven by profit, you were just handed whatever there was coming on and whatever fitted your skill set. And particularly by the end as well at W, I became the person that got put on the difficult accounts to fix them. And there's no real joy with working with difficult clients and difficult people and difficult businesses. And although my problem solving skills are great, it wasn't fun anymore. And I just didn't care. And I think so much of what you do in PR is sales, and it should be so closely aligned with the business. But when you're working with a big corporate, you're not close enough to the CEO, or their egos are so big they can't hear what you're saying anyway. So not that small business CEOs don't have egos, but they are more receptive to hearing your feedback. Not to say also that all of them have egos. So yeah, it was just a real thing for me of I just really wanted to make a difference, and I wanted to work with businesses that I cared about. And so I have a 3 rules of anybody now that I meet, which is, do I like you? Do I believe in what you do? And can I do a good job? And it has to tick all of those 3 boxes.
Oh, I love that.
And if it doesn't, they go, or they don't start.
Yeah. Wow. And how does that feel like sometimes turning away business? Because as a small business owner yourself, that's a really risky, but also like ballsy move.
I don't know how often the people I do say no to know what the reasons, the real reasons might be for me saying no. I guess it is a real position of privilege. I do turn away a lot more work than I take on. And specifically now, in a way, I've got the perfect excuse, because after my first child, I scaled the business down and I stopped doing retainers and I'd only work on projects. So there's obviously only a certain limit to the number of projects I can do. Even if I do scale up with freelancers, there's still only a certain level that I would ever take on to feel that I'm serving the top level that they deserve. So yeah, it is a real luxury, but it's not something, I think because I do walk the PR talk so much, I get so many new business leads without trying that I'm just very lucky in that sense.
Well, very talented, man.
Feels like a bit of a humble brag, but like, yeah, I can just say no. But I've never pitched for anything either. It's just not something I've ever had to worry about. Yeah. There were obviously times, like when I first came back to work after my first maternity leave, where I sort of scratch about a bit, but it's not for more than a week or two.
That's amazing. That's awesome. So you're currently writing your book.
Yeah.
Titled Hype Yourself. Can you give us a bit more detail of what it's going to include and why you decided to write it?
Yeah, sure. So 4 years ago when I set up The Wern, I really wanted to write a book. I really wanted to position myself as an expert and be seen in that space, and got completely distracted and then started trying to set up an agency and a team before I suddenly realised actually I was really running away from what my own dreams were, which was to actually write this book. And in part it was because I've read a lot of PR books by journalists who tell you how to pitch to journalists. But to me, PR is so much more than just getting a piece of press coverage. And there's a whole strategic piece that's missing of, you know, what's your business objectives? Why are you doing it? Like, the amount of times I meet people and go, what's your dream piece of press coverage? And they're like, I don't know. And you're like, what magazine would you like to be in? And more often than not, people only want to be in their industry magazines, which does no benefit to anybody other than their own egos. Like, it doesn't drive their business. You know, people in advertising want to be in Campaign. People in PR want to be in PR Week. But I'm like, that's not getting you any clients. What are you... Come on, people. Let's think about this. I guess I kind of wanted to just show people, you know, you can be strategic and creative. Mm-hmm. And so the first chapter is very much kind of looking at your strategy and making sure that what you're doing is aligned. The second chapter is more like what you need in your media toolkit, because there's a whole, for me, there's like a whole portfolio that you need before you even go out to anybody. Things like headshots, getting your biography done. People just don't have them. And then a journalist suddenly goes, yeah, okay, I'm going to feature you now. Send me your photo. And people are like, I don't have one. Yeah. And I'm like, that's just 101. Like, that should be like the first thing you do before you've even spoken to a single person. And then I kind of talk a little bit more about the different tactics in chapter three. And then chapter four is what I call sort of brain farts. So it's more if you maybe got a bit of budget or just some alternative ways of thinking. But it actually was really hard to kind of almost contain it into one book. So I think the first draft of the manuscript was at 52,000 words and I've whittled it back down to 40.
Oh my gosh.
And I've almost kind of got like a list of like 30 blog posts of stuff that didn't make it in. Which, so it was hard.
But that's amazing, because I definitely, when reading your blogs, like I said in the intro, like, they're full of personality. So I can imagine the book has got all this amazing kind of energy throughout it.
Hopefully. My sub-editor in the first round was like, there's quite a lot of swearing. So I had to take out all the swear words and things like, I do use sort of bits of my personality, but I like to wang on a lot, as you'll probably hear of me talking so much in this. Just like, you know, people won't know what wang on means or what brain farts are. It's hard to keep the personality and also keep it informative, but hopefully it's somewhere down the middle.
Can you talk a little bit about that personality? Because you use yourself as an example as well when you're, you know, teaching or promoting or through your blogs or through the kind of media toolkit and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like, what was the thought behind that and how has that worked? Because it's really, it is entertaining and educational. And I say that in the nicest sense.
Yeah, no, that's good. Entertaining is good, I think. I think I've looked at other people in the industry, not just in PR, but in any industries, and the people that you recognise in business show their personality. So even on a sort of bigger level, everybody knows Richard Branson. Everybody knows he likes hot air ballooning and doing stunts and... You know, he's kind of such a great PR example, really, of somebody who just gets PR. But I think even now, like, when the things that pop up on my LinkedIn all the time, people like Gary Vayner, and I think there's so many men out there who are business owners who are really pushing themselves, and there aren't as many women, and PR is predominantly a female-led industry. So I think first and foremost, I was like, okay, most of the agency owners I know are men, or they're journalists term PRs, and I've actually been in the trenches for a good 15 years. I know a lot, and it's about time I started sort of talking about it. And I think I was so distracted when I set up the company about building the company and building an agency, and I sort of had these mentors who were telling me to like build it to sell it, and then I suddenly realized that I don't actually want that. I just want to establish myself. Once I'm over this kind of early child stage of my life, maybe my career will take a different pivot. But for now, I just want to help as many people and to show authority in that space. Like with the book, it's all like brand building, I guess, for myself, so that I can sort of split myself between doing some better paid work with higher level CEOs that then allows me to create a product that helps hundreds of people that can only afford £100. Mm-hmm. So it was really just a sort of opportunity to be able to scale, I guess, my time and make the use of what I'm good at. And what I'm good at is the actual nitty-gritty of PR. I think I didn't really... I went dormant last year. I just hid. I just ghost worked and did all my client work, and I did it well. I did a photo shoot in October last year, and then in January I deleted everything off my Instagram, everything off my Facebook pages, and I started again. Like, I deleted Twitter, everything. Started from scratch and just went out there and was like, right, I'm going to spend the next 12 months going absolutely ham on getting myself out there, so when the book comes out, I've actually got an audience to sell the book to, because otherwise no one's going to know who I am. So it was a real strategic move to make myself a client.
I love, so you talk a lot in your blogs and other interviews I've seen you do, you talk about pivoting, which I think is like such a great term for going, I just need to move slightly one way or the other to shift it forward. But you're also a super strategical thinker, like even just then, just talking about that. So how did you pick up that knowledge? And also that, I love the notion that it isn't like a failure or something hasn't worked, it's a pivot.
Yeah.
How have you come to that?
I think spending 12 months licking my wounds, probably. The sort of the backstory of that is that after my first child, I didn't want to go back to work at 3 months, and then tried to go back at 6 months and realised I didn't want to go back full time. And the business wasn't sustainable without me being there full time. So I had to make my team redundant. And at that time, I did see that as a failure. And I took a long time to kind of figure out what I wanted to do. And I think really I just gave myself the headspace to figure out what I wanted. And I've always been one of those people that enjoys like the start of a school term or a new exercise book. I love Mondays. I like new starts. I get a real kind of buzz off like, it's okay, we're beginning. And it was coming up to sort of January and I was like, right. And I made a vision board and I planned what I wanted to do. And I wrote a content strategy for myself for the first 3 months of the year and just set myself objectives. But I guess I think probably a huge part of that was actually spending more time with women and women's networking groups, and also just seeing that, like, I think being in your 30s can be quite a pivotal time, whether you have children or not. We've all been in our careers for over a decade. We're looking ahead. We ain't retiring anytime soon. We're figuring out what we actually want to do and the lives we want to have. And things like money might not necessarily seem as important as lifestyle. I think surrounding myself with a lot of kind of contemporaries who were in that change as well. And actually, I was connected to a lady called Liz Ward, who actually runs an agency called Slick Pivot. And she coaches people. And I think I latched onto the word pivot from her, really.
It is such a great word. I loved the way you used it. And yeah, it started making me think about pivots and pivoting. Yeah. Okay, cool. So can you talk about kind of your day-to-day workings? Is there a typical day in your role?
No, there's no typical day. I try to sort of, I do my social media posts first thing. So then because it's a good time because everyone's looking at it when they wake up, but then I'm done and then I can get on with my day. Typically, I'm trying to read newspapers or magazines a lot. I try and at least probably 10%, 15% of my day I'm reading articles.
Sounds so dreamy.
It's really nice. It's really nice. I only really pitch to media on a Tuesday or Wednesday because I find that's the best day for me.
When you say pitch to media, for those that don't know, what does that mean?
So that would be when I'm crafting story ideas to journalists. Mm-hmm. So maybe a Monday or a Friday, I might be doing my writing and constructing how I'm going to pitch to them. So if somebody's like, I really want to be in Marie Claire, for example, I will study that magazine. I will buy it. I will flick through back issues. I will look on all the articles online and really take my time to make sure that I'm not sending anything that wouldn't suit their audience or isn't something they've already done. So actually sometimes I can spend like an hour or two reading just to write one email. The actual email takes 10 minutes, but it's the prep work behind it. And I think that's the difference between what I do and what bad PR is, where they just get a press release and send it to 300 people and then go, oh, no one's covered it. So it's really varied. And increasingly, like my partner's just joined the business to do a design arm. So I'm kind of account managing him. He's an amazing creative. But completely dyslexic. Mm-hmm. So I have to do the sort of account management, like writing his contracts, helping him with his scopes of work. But as I'm sort of 1 week off pregnancy, that's fine. Like I can just ease off and sort of manage him. We have a whole wall in our office of like just a cork board. And it's just my 12-month calendar, yeah. all the post-it notes, everything I want to do. And then I have a 3-month traffic planner for him of stuff coming in, how long it's going to take him.
Amazing. But you might need a little break in the next week or so.
Yeah. We've scheduled some parental time.
Good. So can you tell me, what skills do you need to be a PR expert?
Do you know what? I know so many PR experts and we're all different. And I think it's all about sort of playing to your strengths. Generally speaking, like from when I've done kind of like colour testing or personality tests in agencies, a lot of us are quite emotional and creative types. I think you need that element of strategy. You need that element of not reacting too emotionally. It's so vast, I'd say, like you need to be able to have confidence to be able to pick up the phone and pitch sometimes. I mean, those days are dying out a bit, but still, even if you meet a journalist face to face, you need to be able to just quickly tell your story and get it out there. Being a brilliant writer, being quick, I think a lot of quick and problem solving, like a lot of what kind of comes up in my day to day, not even for crisis PR as such, but things will come up and you'll be like, okay, we need to react to this. What are we going to say? What are we going to do? And I think some of the best publicity you see is from quick thinkers and quick reactors. So it's people who can be that quick and be that creative, but also be strategic and aligned with the brand. So it's sort of a multi-skill set, really.
And what about founder of a company?
Founder of a company, still something I'm learning, I think. But I guess probably having a good inner self-confidence and self-awareness. I think where I've been a bad founder is where I've lost sight of what I am and who I am, what I believe in and the why behind it. Mm-hmm. Like now, I think part of why I've done so well in the last 6 months is because I've been completely true to myself in a kind of love it or hate it way. And it was funny, I saw my brother last week and he's 7 years older than me and he's still into this whole, you're my baby sister. He lives in New York, so we don't see each other that often. He was like, you know, I'm so proud of you. And I was like, do you know what? It's really lovely to hear that, but actually I don't need you to tell me that. Like I'm so confident in what it is that I do for work. In all other aspects of my life, I can be a complete wobbly blanket sometimes and need that emotional sort of support of like, oh, you've done so well with your new bathroom design or whatever it is that really doesn't matter. But I know that I'm good at PR and I know that because of the results I get for my client and the fact that people want to work with me. And I'm sure there's lots of people that find me really annoying and don't want to work with me, and I try and just ignore that bit and think it's fine too and don't see it. But yeah, so it's kind of a, I guess, trying to have a bit of a tough skin about what it is you're doing for work.
And how do you think you got that confidence? Was it just experience? I mean, you are super talented. If you just go on your website and if you don't know anything about you, you're like, yeah, this person is knows what they're doing. It's fun, creative. It's got great clients. It just feels that. How did you, like, it's a mindset, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know. I wasn't, you know, I was the girl that got bullied at school. I was never in the in crowd. I felt for a long time in my sort of teens and 20s of really not having any kind of confidence. But somehow in work, I did have confidence. I don't know why. I actually remember sort of about 5 years ago when I did start the work, I was seeing a counsellor at the time and I was like, I feel like I'm two people, like the person I am at work and then the person I am out of work. I have no idea why the work stuff, particularly because PR is quite stressful and there can be some quite interesting characters
very diplomatic
in the business, and you know I've cried at my desk like the best of them. So it's not that I've had a really easy time and people are like, oh, you're great. I remember one of the last agencies I worked at before I went to they didn't give me a promotion and I was like, okay, well I'm off then. And they were literally like, you're throwing your toys out the pram. And I was like, no, I'm good enough to be promoted, so I'm going. And I went and got the promotion, and I don't know where that comes from. I think it's just, I don't know, it's a weird one.
Oh, I'm so glad you got it. I love that you did that as well. I think people need to do that more. If I can't progress, then I do need to move on. I think that's really important.
Yeah.
Scary, but important.
Scary, yeah. I mean, the one thing about, I guess, being in London and the kind of the agency world is that we can all switch around quite easily. I was still quite junior at that time, so I was probably a bit too cocky for my own good, maybe.
So can you talk about maybe one of the biggest challenges you've faced in your career?
Yeah, do you know what? I thought about this question a lot because there's been a lot. I think generally speaking, my biggest challenge is leadership and leadership roles. I don't think I've had that many amazing female role models to kind of emulate. In the PR industry, most of my bosses or agency owners have been men. I don't think I've necessarily learned a good leadership skills. So when I suddenly had my own team, I really struggled with that, and I struggle with the sort of the HR side of things. There are some amazing women that I have worked with, and I was actually thinking, like one of the first women I worked with was Camilla Harrison at Leo Burnett, and she's the nicest woman in the world. One of my previous bosses was also Jane Austen, who runs Persuasion Communications. And these like women who are under such high pressure, never snap, never shout, never raise their voice. And I just think, I don't know how you do that, but I really want to have that presence. Yeah. Because when I'm overwhelmed, I'm a snapper. And that's not something that I'm proud of. And I feel like if I was to have a team and all I was doing was running a team, I'd be fine. But running a team and my own workload, I really struggle with. And I don't think there's a lot of support out there for leadership training. It's really quite corporate when you look into it. Mm. The only sort of real leadership training out there is very serious. So yeah, I think kind of just how to be a good leader is something that I would definitely invest a lot of money in if I was to build up a big team in an agency again.
Do you think you'll do that?
Not for the foreseeable. Not because I think I'm so awful as a leader, but I think the model doesn't work for small businesses and startups. Uh-huh. They don't need a big agency on retainer. I would much rather work with a select group of freelance PRs and upskill for specific projects and maybe run more of a collective than I think have a sort of team in-house again.
What do you love about being the founder of your own PR company and working within communications?
My favourite thing about being a founder is being able to pick and choose the clients and also just genuinely making a difference to the businesses that I work with. And a lot of the smaller brands that I've been involved with, I'm almost sort of best friends with them now. You really go on the journey with them. And when they suddenly have a load of sales because of a piece of press coverage you've got, it's the best feeling. So I think just being in control of my own time, being a pregnant founder is brilliant. Because I can get up at 5 a.m. and start power working and then take a nap in the afternoon and no one knows. Well, they do now because I'm saying it here. But like kind of, you can really control your own time. And that is, you know, it's just, I think the whole flexi working is coming into the business world conversation, but still too slowly and not quick enough. And, you know, for me, I work from home in like a garden office. If I need to go inside for 2 hours after lunch to have a little bit of a nap and then maybe I'm not as productive in the afternoon as I am in the morning. That's okay. There's no one there to judge but myself.
Yeah. And if you're up at 5 a.m, for God's sakes.
It's the joy of a toddler. He was literally like, it's sunny. You're like, yeah, I get it, but no.
Yeah. Cool. So how do you fuel your own creativity? Where do you go? What do you do?
So I'm kind of lucky that my partner's quite creative too. So we do a lot of stuff together. Lots of kind of museums, make the most of London, like Barbican, Tate Modern, any sort of pop-up things that are going on. I read so much, so many magazines, so many newsletters. I was talking to somebody the other day about newsletters. She was like, who opens them? And I was like, me? Like podcasts, radio. Radio is so underrated, especially as like a PR mechanic. But I love radio. But even for me, I watch something now on Netflix and be like, oh, that's a PR blog post. Like one of my most popular Instagram posts was about Fire Festival.
Really? Yeah. Oh, that's hilarious.
But it's like, I watched that and was just like, yeah. I mean, I think for so many reasons, everybody, I had to watch it in 3 installments. I couldn't even handle the pressure of what was going on. It was just too, it was just so excruciatingly awful on so many levels that I couldn't tolerate even sort of watching too much in one hit. So yeah, I guess I sort of, when I read a magazine, it's not the same way I think other people read magazines. Yeah. And one of my friends the other day was like, take some time out and relax. And I was like, yeah, I've just bought a stack of mags. And she was like, that's work for you. But I guess it's that sort of thing of like, what's work-life balance? And it all sort of spills
well,
into the
it?
Other.
Yeah.
I guess getting out there. And also I love like other small businesses. And so for me, kind of, I go down like complete rabbit holes on Instagram, but it's more like looking at one small business who's a fan of another small business and kind of disappearing down this sort of alley. So like one of my favorite small businesses is Mean Mail, mm-hmm. and I finally like met her the other week and was like, yes, this is brilliant.
With your PR hat on, mm-hmm. what advice would you give to a small business startup with the basics in terms of public relations?
The basics, I would say, get your headshots, get your images, get a biography, kind of just put your planning in place and just set yourself some kind of content strategy targets. It doesn't have to be a national newspaper. I started this year with, I'm going to do 3 podcasts, 3 speaking events, and I'm going to do 2 guest posts a month. Mm-hmm. And that's literally how I started and then sort of worked my way outreaching from that.
Amazing. Okay. And what advice would you give someone considering a career in PR?
It is hard to get into PR. It's definitely about who you know, unfortunately, and it's still quite cliquey. But I think being passionate about it, if you're really into a specific niche, focus on that niche. There's nothing wrong. You know, if you're like, I really want to work in fashion and beauty, great, do that. Personally, for me, I kept it really, really broad because I didn't know what I wanted to specialise in for a really long time. So there's advantages to both. But applying to agencies for work experience, following them. And I think it's almost the same as the way I'd pitch to a journalist is pitching to a PR agency. I can tell when an intern or an apprentice has actually studied me mm-hmm. and really is like knows what my business is about, mm-hmm. as opposed to just sending a blanket email out. But there's places like Inspiring Interns or Eric Festival who kind of champion like getting creatives out there. So I think just sort of finding any way you can sort of get into an agency, and then once you've got your foot in the door, just show them what you're made of.
So I'm going to ask you what you've got coming up in the next few weeks and months.
So because you can't see me, I'm actually fairly large right now and I'm due to give birth in a week. So that's going to dominate. But actually part of my pivot is for my next sort of 6-month plan is to basically work on promoting the book. Mm-hmm. So getting lots of content ready out for that. We've just bought out our first product called 52 PR Tips, which is like a packet of cards. So I haven't really done any promo work for that. So I'm going to start actually PRing that and doing some product work. And essentially just sort of hopefully developing my online courses to come out in January to go with the book. Mm-hmm. But if I get a difficult baby, have a difficult time, I might just spend 6 months with my feet up. So mm-hmm. I really kind of set it up that I can take on as much or as little work as I feel able to, because it's essentially I'm the client for 6 months. And actually I've been kindly offered some kind of teaching roles and some paid for blog post work as well. So as and when I'm ready, I can just do that, all that sort of stuff from home. So the next 6 months is kind of just being dormant and content prep, and then January I should be out the gate again.
It's amazing. I love that you've managed to set that up. That's so strategic again. Cool. So something I ask everyone before they leave is there a career or job in the creative industries you know little about, you'd like to know more about? And is there another woman that you could recommend to come on Greater Than 11%?
So on both of those, I was also really struggling, but I think I'm absolutely fascinated by futurologists, mm-hmm. how they do it. I don't understand it. Quite often I've seen them. They then seem to be speaking the truth. Yeah. So I'm sort of obsessed with futurologists. Okay. So that's kind of that was my first one. Yeah. The women one, that was so hard. There was about 50 people on my list. Mm-hmm. I really love the 2 female founders behind Eric Festival, Sam and May. Mm-hmm. They're really young and just totally shaking up the creative industries, totally championing young creative talent, really want to take on the old guard and show them what they need to be doing. They're looking at doing things like bringing in young board of directors into creative industries to try and just sort of shake it up. And I think there are so many people that I respect who are older than me, but actually we're all guilty of not listening to the people who are younger than us. So I think sort of champion a bit of the youth.
Awesome. Oh, that'd be great. I'm definitely going to reach out to them. Lucy, I've so loved having you here. I'm so wishing you best of luck in the next 6 months.
Thank you.
So yeah, thank you.
Thanks very much.
This podcast is made possible by the support of Hub, an insight-led content agency based in London. A huge thank you to the producers, Pat Murray and James Haverson, our editors, Daniel Clark and Laura Francis, and to Maria Contenenza for designing the beautiful artwork.